Mark, you're the former vice president of Search Community Health Services, and I know when I interviewed you a few months ago, we had the usual doggerel about pursuing other career opportunities and so on, and it was the real thing. I guess the new opportunities came rather quickly for you. You are just back from Sumatra.
That's right.
And I don't mean to make light of what you're doing. I think it's fantastic. In fact, that but the your desire to pursue put your expertise to work in international relief came rather sooner than later in this case.
Yeah, I retired from Search on September 30th and was on the road October 6th. It was perhaps in retrospect was a little too rapid in terms of kind of taking off on in a new direction.
Well, you're back now, and I guess the reason you're back is because the organization you work for now just gives you a month-long assignment in these places that happen to be devastated by, in this case, a natural disaster.
Well, yeah, I've been hired by a non-governmental organization, or in the vernacular of the field, an NGO, mm-hmm. Relief International, based in Los Angeles, and they've hired me on as a global consultant, and that could be a month in the field or 3 months. And for the Sumatra response, they asked me to go over for about 5 weeks.
All right. So the Sumatra earthquake occurred on September 30th, and it was fairly large. Fairly large.
Magnitude 7.6 on the Richter scale.
Yeah, and it. I was just looking at some pictures before we went on the air. It looks like the main city that was affected was Padang.
Padang, which is a city of about 1 million people.
Right. It's hard to, I was trying to give this, I was trying to just put the images in context. I think the last big quake that got people's attention like this, at least in this country, was the 2004 Indian Ocean quake and tsunami.
Mm-hmm. And there was a huge quake in China, I think, in 2007.
So,
which I think killed about 60,000 people. And then there was another large one in Pakistan.
Right. Yeah, it's... I guess the thing that the thing that I was driving at is that we have sort of a standard for what the scale of devastation is in these events, and I think of the 2004 quake as being extraordinarily high. But looking at these pictures, this quake didn't even involve a tsunami, but this city was in just in places it was just flattened.
Yeah, the destruction was really quite massive, and I think the loss of life was very relatively light in terms of the magnitude of the quake. About 1,200 people lost their lives, and in part that was a timing issue. It occurred about 5 p.m. and there was a pre-tremor, from my understanding, that warned people, and a lot of people evacuated the buildings before the major quake hit.
Hmm. All right. So that's a important factor, I guess. Particularly after 2004, there were efforts to try and improve warnings, and I guess that when there are warnings now, people in that part of the world will take heed.
Yeah, as a result of the 2004 quake, there's a whole new school out there called disaster risk reduction. It's how do you reduce risk in earthquake areas, and there's education, building technique, and it's subscribed to by all the donor agencies in the countries in the ring of fire, the earthquake zone around the globe.
So are we learning? Are things improving in terms of preparedness and the ability to respond to this kind of disaster, or is it still kind of?
Oh, very much crazy? So. In fact, in the Sumatra response, lessons learned from the 2004 tsunami were very apparent. The government of Indonesia has a very, very strong disaster response team, in large part funded by the U.S. government, and they've applied lessons learned. You certainly see it in the construction technique that it's required in these earthquake zones, that as you rebuild, that you incorporate earthquake resistant design into your construction.
What were some of the differences in your experience between 2004 and this your most recent trip?
Well, in 2004, I went to Sri Lanka, which was hit very hard by the tsunami, lost about 30,000 Sri Lankans, compared to Sumatra, which I think lost about 123,000. So it was quite a difference. I think the UN is far better organized to deal with the emergency response. One of the things that has happened over the last 3 decades since I've been in the business is just a blossoming of NGOs, non-governmental organizations. In the Banda Aceh response, 450 international NGOs responded to that emergency. The Indonesians called that the second tsunami because they were attendant problems with the coordination, duplication of service, and the competition.
Mm-hmm.
The planting of the agency flag saying, this is my area. And in response to that, the United Nations Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Assistance has created a very strong structure to coordinate the emergency response.
And why are we seeing so many NGOs? Is it a blossoming of concern, or is this a kind of opportunity for NGOs? Or
I think it's a very, very good question. I think it starts with concern and then becomes an industry in it. And I think clearly there is a disaster industry out there, and I saw that very much in play in Sumatra, where agencies are on the ground and they're highly competitive. They're wanting to demonstrate their competencies and capabilities on the ground because in there lies their funding.
Mm-hmm.
It's a little uncomfortable for me, that element of disaster response.
Well, how do you drop in and integrate yourself into this mix? What's a typical day like for Mark Gorman?
Well, I arrived on scene about 8 days after the earthquake, and I was joined by Relief International's emergency response coordinator, an Irishman with strong competencies in the field. And the first thing we did was go to the UN headquarters, the field headquarters that had been established and registered. And then we started attending the UN coordination meetings, which you could go to UN coordination meetings all day long. There were probably 400 to 500 people at this operations center. And you would start listening to where the response was in the process, where the unmet needs were, where the duplication was occurring. We had some resources to initiate programs immediately. We then also started writing proposals, and in the vernacular of the relief response, they're called concept notes. There's mm-hmm. a whole new language out there that I had to learn.
Mm-hmm.
So you develop these 3 to 5 page concept notes and give them to the donors. For the U.S. agencies, the main donor is the United States Agency for International Development, USAID, and they fund NGOs on the ground during emergency responses. So you're working with them saying, this is what we're seeing, are you interested in funding us? We developed 2 concept notes, neither of them were funded.
All right. So in other words, you're kind of the link between the actual material aid
mm-hmm.
and the need. You're Relief International. You with your background in community health and public health, and this guy, the Irishman with his emergency mm-hmm. sort of response background, go out there and find a way to bring the aid to where it's needed.
That's correct.
Needed.
We're doing the program development, the assessment, then the development.
All right. And is that good work? I mean, if the concept paper doesn't get funded, do you still feel like you've made?
Well, we actually did establish a program. There are other vehicles to get funding outside of the USAID and the donor countries, direct contributions to the relief agency, which Relief International received quite a bit, and we were using those resources to establish a program. And we did establish a program by the time I left, which was interesting. It was a coconut palm milling program.
Mm-hmm.
one of the things that we saw when we were in the, doing our field assessments is that people were, the biggest need there was clearly shelter. 200,000 homes were destroyed by the quake. They figured 250 to 300,000 people were left homeless. And it was the beginning of the monsoon season, so shelter was the highest priority. And so people started reconstructing emergency and transitional shelters from the salvage of their destroyed homes, and they were cutting down coconut palms and milling them with chainsaws mm-hmm. at great expense to them. And so we found a community that actually requested some assistance in the milling of coconut palms, and we created a coconut palm milling cooperative and bought them chainsaws and said this is, and they said this is how they would do it, that the neediest families would get supported in the milling of coconut palms. It was pretty exciting. It was a very different approach to disaster response.
I get it. That's great. That's really interesting. Mark, we don't have much time left, but are you now a Southeast or South Asia specialist, or would Relief International send you to a disaster in the Arctic or something next? What's the common theme running now in your background?
Well, I think the next step is unknown, but when they Relief International started talking to me, the assignments they were talking to me about were Yemen, Ethiopia, and Palestine. And I mentioned that to Richard Nelson. He said, are you sure it's called Relief International, not Death Wish International? So I'm not sure I'm ready to call up for Yemen, but that is a possibility. So now I wouldn't call myself a specialist. I'm available, and I have an interest to provide service.
All right. And is it literally now just a matter of waiting for the call? You listen to the news and
that's right. But I'll be in communication with the office in L.A. And it's not only disaster response, but Relief International has development programs around the world. And if they need some assessment, evaluation, or relief staff, that would be an assignment that I would consider.
All right. Mark Gorman, it's great to have you back in town. And hopefully we can see around it and follow your career as it moves into this new and really interesting stage.
That's good to be home. Thanks for inviting me in.
I've been speaking with Mark Gorman. He is the former vice president of community health over at Search. He's now a global consultant for Relief International. He's just back from a month-long tour providing earthquake relief in Sumatra.